powered by Gannett, Florida. Hello, I'm Sarasota Herald Tribune political editor Zach Anderson, and I'm joined as always by Gannett Capitol correspondent John Kennedy. Hey, John.
Hi, Zach.
Well, an impeachment vote is looming in Washington, D.C., and we'll tell you what some Florida lawmakers had to say during last night's debate on articles of impeachment. We'll also touch on a few issues you might not have heard as much about, including Governor Ron DeSantis' effort to require civics education in Florida high schools, a controversial abortion bill, and another open congressional seat here in Florida. But first, you all know what that music means. It's time to pick a number. John, Christmas is right around the corner. Did you bring a numeric gift that you're going to bestow on us today?
Zach, we're coming up on the Christmas season. I'm already worried about the credit card bill, so I'm holding back some on the number I found this week. It's a slim trim 45.
45. John budgeting with his number here. Okay, and I guess I'm on a budget as well today because my number is a simple one. That's 45 for John Kennedy, one for Zach Anderson, and just write those numbers down, folks. Remember them. We'll come back to them at the end of the show and tell you what they mean in Florida politics. Well, last night, the House Judiciary Committee debated articles of impeachment late into the evening. A committee vote is expected soon, and the measure will then go to the full House. Let's hear what some of Florida's lawmakers had to say during last night's debate. Here's Miami Congressman Debbie Mercosell Powell, who is a Democrat who serves on the committee. She said she came to Congress to focus on issues like health care and climate change, not impeaching a president.
I did not come to impeach the president, but this president has violated the rule of law. The evidence is overwhelming that the president withheld military aid approved by Congress and leveraged a White House meeting in order to extract a personal and political favor from a foreign government. You see, what the president wanted was the announcement of an investigation into his political opponent to help in his reelection campaign. One of our most fundamental rights, the right to a free and fair election, was threatened. In an attempted cover-up, he instructed his administration to ignore legally binding congressional subpoenas, and he has done all of this to benefit himself personally, not to benefit the country. It is undeniable that this president has violated his oath of office, abused his power, and obstructed Congress. This is a clear and present danger to the future of our democracy, a system of government that was a beacon of freedom for my family and for so many that have come here. Tonight, I ask all Americans to put their personal affections and their political affiliations aside and consider the long-term health of our democracy.
Meanwhile, Sarasota Republican Congressman Greg Stube reiterated his opposition to impeachment.
So let me recap. No collusion, no obstruction, no quid pro quo, no treason, no bribery, and no high crimes and misdemeanors. The only abuse of power that I see is that which Ms. Turley highlighted. That abuse of power of this Congress and how this Democratic majority has run this chamber, this committee, and this investigation. The chairman and members of this committee keep saying that history will judge our decisions. Well, I would offer that your decisions and that of your colleagues in the majority will be judged much sooner than in history. They will be judged by the voters in November of 2020. Then I guess we will see who was on the right side of history.
So there's Stube predicting that impeachment will be a big issue in the election, which I think we can all agree on. It's still not clear, though, which side has the political advantage on this issue. John, I'm not sure what else there is that's left to say about impeachment, but I thought it was somewhat interesting that Mercosell Powell is still fully on board. There was a story in the Washington Post this morning that talked about how Democrats are bracing for some moderates in swing districts that were districts that Trump carried in 2016, but Democrats were able to win in 2018, that they might defect on this vote, that they might vote against impeachment, or maybe only vote for one of the articles of impeachment, and that anywhere from a handful to half a dozen or more could end up voting against this because they see it as a political loser. Mercosell Powell is in a district down in Miami that was held by Republican Carlos Curbelo. This was considered a swing district very recently, but it's a little bit different, isn't it?
Yeah, it's one of those super South Florida districts that is very divided. As you mentioned, Mercosul Powell defeated Carlos Curbelo, who has been an incumbent Republican congressman, but he was hanging on by a thread as well because of the divide in that district. Yeah, she is one of those that, you know, on paper, you might wonder, you know, could she somehow defect from the Democratic position on this? But like many across the country, it's going to be only a handful that don't go along. But I suppose if there are even a few Democrats that don't support the impeachment, that's something that's going to be seized on by President Trump and by Republicans as signs that this was an ill-conceived approach here, this idea of trying to impeach the president. It'll give some political play to the Republicans if they get even a few Democrats not going along with the party majority right now.
Yeah, Democrats were talking about trying to get bipartisan support for impeachment. It looks like there could be bipartisan support against impeachment, which would hurt their case going forward. But with Mercosul Powell, it seems to me like there's swing districts and then there's swing districts. You know, I mean, this is a Miami swing district is a lot different than a swing district somewhere in rural middle America. She represents a lot of immigrants. And I just suspect that Trump is not all that popular in her district. So it's probably easier for her to go for impeachment than other swing district lawmakers. Well, I'm sure there'll be much more to talk about impeachment related in the coming weeks, but we're going to switch gears here and talk a little bit about what's going on in the state legislature. This was the last committee week in Tallahassee before the legislature convenes in January for its annual 2-month legislative session. And there were plenty of bills flying around in the halls of the Capitol this week. Maybe the most controversial and emotional of the bills heard before a committee this week is an effort to force minors to get parental approval before having an abortion. John, you were at that committee hearing. How did that debate play out?
Yeah, this parental consent bill, which cleared the Senate's Health Policy Committee on a party line vote, that's going to be one of the most watched and argued over bills of the legislative session that begins next month. This week was really a preview of the kind of emotion that it stirs and the battle lines that have already been set. This was the last round of committee hearings before the session starts, as you mentioned, and this bill drew about an hour and a half's worth of speakers from across the spectrum of abortion rights. I heard scripture quoted. There was a sharing of some occasionally disturbing stories of people's past experience with abortion. And there was the occasional anger and outrage expressed on both sides of this issue. And there were even some who spoke that they didn't like the bill because it didn't attempt to outright ban abortion, which under the 1973 Roe versus Wade decision in the U.S. Supreme Court, they declared it's a constitutional right. But those seeking an outright ban were really a distinct minority. More people were like Janice Morrow. She is with the Christian Family Coalition of Florida. And here's how she saw the bill. She said it's a parent's rights issue.
On, you know, this issue that is pretty basic, it is parental rights. What are we talking about? I know people are talking about abortion. We have opinions on that. But right now, this bill is really not about abortion. It is about myself as a parent or as a grandparent being able to have input.
Well, despite what Morrow says, it is about abortion. And by contrast, there's a young woman who attends Florida State University, Alana Felton, who testified that she saw the bill as really designed as an attack on women's rights. Here's Felton.
As a young woman and a Floridian, I urge you not to support SB 404, because this bill is a Trojan horse. It's a challenge to the privacy clause in Florida State Constitution, R. Roe v. Wade, disguised as concern over familial relationships. Its real agenda is regulating women's bodies and limiting their access to safe and legal abortions.
Well, the bill is by Senator Kelly Stargell, a Republican from Lakeland, and it requires girls under age 18 that are seeking an abortion to get notarized consent from their parents or a legal guardian. Otherwise, they could go to court and seek a judge's waiver to have the procedure. Now, a survey of Florida's 67 county courts that was conducted by abortion rights advocates found them saying that more than half of Florida's counties are currently unprepared to deal with questions involving judicial waivers for abortion. So that question is out there, too, about how, you know, effective would this be and how easily would it be for people to navigate this system. But for Republicans in the House and Senate, this parental consent bill is a good election year issue for conservative voters. The legislature feels empowered by the changing balance on the U.S. Supreme Court and also the state Supreme Court. So they feel that this kind of bill has a chance of standing up constitutionally. And it also looks like it could fit with stricter sanctions against immigrant communities, something that Governor DeSantis has already weighed in on in favor, along with his proposed teacher pay increase, which could maybe weaken the level of opposition coming from a usually Democratic ally, the state's biggest teachers union. These are all, you know, Republican election year kind of issues that are making their way into the forefront. We've seen the governor in recent weeks even parrot the Trump administration's view of cracking down on vaping among youth. Trump had come out in September strongly to ban flavored vaping products, but he retreated around the same time that polls showed that it might hurt his candidacy among vaping voters in swing states, including Florida. So DeSantis has said that he agrees with Trump on this and that you've got to tread carefully with any kind of vaping limits. So again, why parental notice this year? It may be because it's an election year and this polls well with conservatives.
Well, John, we've talked about this bill in the past and we've talked about how it's significant that it's advancing in the Senate. In the past, the Senate has put the brakes on abortion legislation. How far does it have to go at this point? I mean, is it pretty close to the finish line?
Well, in the House, it is. We may see a vote there in the month of January, I would wager. In the Senate, it still has a couple more committees to get through before it goes to the floor. So we're going to see some of this drama play out a little bit more on the Senate side into the regular session when it starts.
All right. So some more explosive committee hearings for you in the future, it looks like. Well, the 2020 election is looming over the legislative session this year with lawmakers pushing bills like this abortion legislation that they can tout on the campaign trail. The election continues to take shape, and a big development came this week when another GOP member of Florida's congressional delegation, Ted Yoho, announced that he's retiring. Yoho is a veterinarian from the Gainesville area. He became the 23rd GOP congressman to announce his retirement, including Francis Rooney from the Naples area. John, a narrative has been building that the wave of GOP retirements is a sign that Republicans know that they can't take back the House, so they're leaving rather than enduring life in the minority. Some could also face tough reelection campaigns in a year that, again, is expected to favor Democrats down ballot. But Yoho's situation is a little bit different, right?
Yeah, Yoho is a veterinarian from Gainesville who'd been elected to four terms in Congress. And when he came in, he said that he wouldn't serve more than 8 years. So he's sticking by that pledge. Somewhat ironically, when he ran and won a Republican primary in 2012, he upset a veteran incumbent Republican, Cliff Stearns. And the campaign theme that Yoho had that year was, "Had enough?" to voters. Well, it looks like Yoho has had enough. And though you're right, though, it seems like many of these departing Republicans, some are voicing frustration with Washington and others are just tired of being in the minority in the U.S. House. But his departure will draw candidates to that northeast central Florida district. Zach, are you hearing much on domino effect here?
Yeah, I think that's one of the more interesting things about this retirement. I had read that Keith Perry, who's a state senator from the Gainesville area, might be interested in this congressional seat. And if Perry runs, then that opens up his state Senate seat, which is considered a swing seat. Democrats have pushed hard to try and win that seat in the past. And if you look at like the balance of power in Florida politics, Republicans control both chambers of the legislature. They control the governor's mansion. They really control all the levers of power. Now they have a strong majority on the Supreme Court. But the place where Democrats have the most opportunity is in the state Senate, where I think right now it's 23-17 Republican to Democrat. So, you know, they only need to pick up, three seats to have a equally divided chamber. They're much more outnumbered in the Florida House. So if Democrats had a good shot at picking up Perry's state Senate seat, that would be a significant shift. Every pickup in the Senate is noteworthy. So I who knows if Perry ends up running, but that might be one of the bigger developments if he does from this Yoho retirement. What do you think?
Yeah, Tom? Now anticipating that Yoho might pack it in, there are already two candidates in the Republican primary and two in the Democratic primary for the election, and the filing deadline is late April of next year. Also, there's another guy, Ocala Mayor Kent Gwynn. He's also mulling over a decision to run for the seat. So Perry would have a little bit of competition that's already in the field, but he is a prominent player in that area. So his entry into that race could really change things a lot.
Yeah, and in terms of like local politics, I know when Greg Stube ran for, there was a congressman, Tom Rooney, who retired the last cycle. Greg Stube ran for Tom Rooney's congressional seat, and then Stube was a state senator. So then Joe Gruters ran for Greg Stube's state Senate seat. Joe Gruters is now the chair of the Republican Party of Florida. He's also a state senator. And then somebody ran for Joe Gruter's state House seat. So it really does create a lot of dominoes when one of these congressional seats opens up, and it can change the local delegation and open up opportunities for lawmakers who could be up and coming lawmakers to watch. So anytime you have a retirement like this, it does, kind of shake up the political scene a little bit. Well, today on the podcast, we've moved back and forth from developments in Congress to developments in the Florida legislature. And when I talk to some people, they don't really understand the difference between Congress and the legislature, between a state senator and a U.S. senator. I think there's kind of a general lack of awareness amongst a pretty broad swath of this country about the different levels of government and some fundamental aspects of our civic life, which has prompted both Republicans and Democrats to call for more civics education. And the latest call came this week from Governor Ron DeSantis, who held an event in Naples to discuss a new high school civics test that will soon be rolling out in schools in Florida. It's modeled on the test that immigrants take to become U.S. citizens. Right now, passing the test won't be required in order to graduate, DeSantis said, but that could be in the works down the road. John, civics education is something that plays pretty well with voters who tend to be older and better educated on these issues and maybe concerned about the future generation and whether they know that much about our structure of government. We've heard politicians pay lip service to this for years, but now we're actually going to have a civics test here in Florida. Are you interested in seeing what the results could be? I mean, it could be a little bit depressing to think how little some people might know about these issues. I mean, you and I as political reporters have a lot of understanding of this, and probably a lot of people listening to this podcast, but I'm thinking that it could be pretty demoralizing to see how little people know.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think the results could be pretty grim, especially when you're talking about, the high school age students, because it does seem that people, not just high school kids, but plenty of adults, are losing whatever grip they had on government and how our system of democracy really works. Never mind knowing what the capital of Idaho is. By the way, Zach, the answer to that is Boise. I looked it up. but passing the civics exam, it, at least it's not going to be a requirement for graduation. So high school seniors can relax a little bit. But DeSantis talked about strengthening civics back during his campaign for governor, and he repeated it during his State of the State address soon after he was sworn in. So maybe it's not that much of a surprise, but It is a step that we'll have to see what the results are when students are actually forced to start bubbling in their answers.
Well, I'm hoping we'll be pleasantly surprised. You know, millennials are always getting dumped on that they're lazy and not ambitious. And it seems like, you know, older people love to blame all the problems in this country on millennials. Maybe millennials will surprise us, or I guess this isn't millennials. This is a younger generation even who's going to be taking this high school test. But maybe the youth will surprise us with their knowledge. Maybe we're underestimating them. Well, we're going to move on to our final segment here. John, your number was 45. You want to tell us what that means?
Yeah, my 45 is dollars, and that's the difference in per capita spending between the budget proposal made last year by Governor DeSantis and this year. It's $45 lower this year. Now, DeSantis' $91.4 billion budget proposal is only up by $418 million from last year, so that's pretty small. And of course, Florida's population continues to grow. You always hear that talk of you know, something like 800 people a day are moving into Florida. So that results in per capita spending in the budget being down precisely $44.70 to be precise, and it's $4,161 per Floridian. That's the you know, number that it amounts to when you divide up his $91.4 billion budget. This little budget nugget was presented this week to the House Appropriations Committee as it starts to go over DeSantis' spending plan. And the House likes to pride itself on appearing very fiscally conservative. So maybe that helps him sell his ideas to the legislature. The governor's budget staff was quick to let that factoid be known, that he's actually looking to spend less per Floridian than he did last year.
Always important to keep an eye on the budget, as lawmakers love to say, it's the only bill that they are actually required to pass each year. And these numbers are fretted over and watched very closely as the legislative session approaches. Well, my number is one, as in Air Force One, which touched down in Florida last weekend when President Donald Trump came to speak to the state GOP's annual statesman dinner. There's a lot of drama surrounding this event. They didn't have a keynote speaker booked, and Florida GOP chair Joe Gruters initially said that the dinner was going to be delayed, but then Governor Ron DeSantis stepped in and announced that things would proceed as scheduled, and lo and behold, the president would be speaking, which obviously is a huge draw, a huge fundraising event for the party. So getting Trump there was a big deal. The event was kind of unusual in the sense that it was closed to the press. Typically, Trump seems to love the media attention that he gets at his rallies, but this one was a closed door event. So the only reports that we've gotten are what from people inside have said, that Trump was kind of maybe a little bit freer, looser, telling a lot of jokes. But you know, probably the biggest takeaway from this is that, you know, if the president hadn't been there, that would have been a blow for the party. This is a huge a fundraising event for them every year. It's also, you know, a huge state for the president. He wants the party to be healthy and successful and spending money to help his reelection bid. So whatever drama that they had going in, it seems like they ironed it all out. And it sounds like the event was successful, which is probably good news for Republicans. Not so good news if you don't want to see Trump do well in Florida. But whatever issues they had, you know, they were able to overcome them. Well, that wraps up another episode of Inside Florida Politics. I want to thank our audio production team, Thomas Cordy and Joseph Lozano, and thanks to all of you for listening. We're out of here.